Welcome to the Brilliant Business Moms Podcast, episode 93, with Sarah Kornack and Beth Ann Schwamberger. Today on the podcast, we're talking with Kirsten Thompson of the blog Sweet Tea and Saving Grace blog.com. Kirsten really knows her stuff when it comes to email marketing and newsletters. I know you're going to learn a lot from her. So let's get started.
You're listening to the Brilliant Business Moms Podcast, practical business advice for startup moms.
Today on the podcast, we are talking with Kirsten Thompson of the blog Sweet Tea and Saving Grace blog.com. Kirsten has been blogging since 2011 and recently launched a course teaching others to harness the power of email newsletters. Kirsten lives near Atlanta, Georgia with her husband and daughter. Welcome to the show, Kirsten.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Kirsten, could you begin by telling us a little bit about yourself, your family, and how you got started in business and blogging?
Sure. I've been blogging for about 5 years, actually. And I started actually under the name One Tough Mother, kind of just as something to keep me occupied. And I did that for a long time, and I was trying to keep up with bigger bloggers and do everything they were doing, and I got burned out. And in January of last year, I actually took a huge step away, and I took about 6 months off from blogging completely, and I came back in the end of May last year with a completely different focus, just refreshed view of what I wanted out of my blog, and I rebranded to Sweet Tea and Saving Grace, and it's just been really great success ever since then. I decided to add the business aspect of it last fall when I added the virtual assistance piece. I started offering everything that I've learned over the course of my blogging career as a virtual assistance offering to bloggers in my niche. So the email marketing piece actually kind of came about on its own. I've been using MailChimp myself for about 3 years, and I kept having clients ask me to design their newsletters for them, and they were realizing the potential of email marketing, but they didn't know where to start, and I kind of became the go-to person for email marketing, and that's kind of how all of this evolved.
When you switched your branding from One Tough Mother to Sweet Tea and Saving Grace, did you retain a lot of the same readers, or was it kind of a starting from scratch process?
Actually, I've retained quite a bit, and I didn't really lose momentum over the 6 months that I was off, which really surprised me. It was a pleasant surprise. I still do all of my DIY and craft projects, and I still share home decor, but the biggest piece that changed was kind of the back office stuff for me. I stopped focusing so much on the numbers and the analytics and what I'm not doing, and instead I started focusing more on what I actually want to accomplish and what I need to be doing to get there rather than what other bloggers are doing to reach their own version of success. So it was kind of just a shift in my mentality when I came back, and really on the forefront, what my readers saw was a rebranding with a new name and things like that, but the real focus and the real change was what happened behind the scenes for me personally.
So I'm curious, in terms of that, like you mentioned, there are just so many things that we can be doing potentially to grow our blog, to make an income online, and we can feel like we're pulled in a million different directions. When you chose to kind of step back and then refocus, what were those things that you decided, I'm going to focus on this, and this is how my business will grow, and, you know, this is what's working for me?
My biggest thing was engagement with my readers. I love the community that blogging brings, and even though, you know, as a blogger, we sit behind a screen and our readers are on the opposite end of the world sometimes, but there's a really tight sense of community there, and I love that aspect. So I really focus hard on getting to know my readers and helping them to know me better, and that was my number one goal. And I've got some projects in the works that are hopefully I can bring about in the next several months that will take some of that online community and put it in real life. But that was my biggest thing that I really wanted to accomplish. And I wanted to monetize my blog, but I didn't want to do it in a way that felt like it was selling out. So I didn't want to just take on sponsored posts just to make money. If I come across a sponsored post that fits my niche and it's something I would talk about anyway, then I'll do it. And it's a nice incentive that I get paid. But I didn't want that to be my number one income generating thing for my blog. So that's kind of where the VA piece came in. I started doing virtual assistants because I really love the technical and business side of blogging, and I figured I've learned enough on my own, and I'm still learning enough on my own that I can use what I already learn, and I can help other bloggers who either don't know how to do things or they're just entirely too busy and they need to hand some of their duties off on me. So those kind of things were some of the things that I shifted my focus on. So I was really focused on increasing page views and getting as many sponsored posts as I could. And my editorial calendar was ridiculously full, but it wasn't bringing me joy. So I really had to take that step back and figure out what exactly it was that I love about blogging and just do that.
I absolutely love your new philosophy. It sounds very refreshing to hear that sort of perspective. It's not engagement for sake of engagement. It's engagement for the sake of your enjoying your audience and interacting with them. So I applaud you there.
Well, thank you.
I think I read on your website that you still hold a full-time job while you are doing all of this. You have the blog and the VA. So how exactly do you fit all this in and make time for everything?
I don't sleep.
Oh, no.
I'm just kidding. That would be ideal if I could work 24 hours a day. I still don't think I'd get everything done. But one of the issues that I had last year when I walked away from my blog for so long was finding that balance. And like I said, you know, I had a very full editorial calendar and I was constantly busy, but I didn't feel productive and I didn't have joy. So when I came back, I made a pact with myself that regardless of what I put on my plate, I would make sure that I found that balance constantly. And if I found that things were getting too out of control, I'd take something off and I wouldn't make myself feel so guilty about it. And that was something that I really had to work on. As much as I do, I have very few virtual assistant clients because I do tell people no, and I limit my blogging. One of the things that I do now, I have a consistent Friday schedule that's basically a roundup every Friday, and that takes one of my weekly posts, and it's still a quality post, but it doesn't require me to actually create something and take all the pictures and edit them and write a post and all that stuff. So it alleviates some of the blog work. So there's just little things that I do, and then I've been really focusing on stepping away from my to-do list as much as I can. I work when I have time. I get as much done as I can, and I try to just be as organized as possible. So when I do have these chunks of time to get things done, I can knock out as much on my to-do list as possible. But, you know, a couple weeks ago, my husband wanted to go fishing, and I had a mile-long to-do list, but I put it away, and I went fishing, and it was awesome, and it was exactly what I needed. And nothing fell apart because I did that. Life still goes on. The blog was still there. Nothing was on fire when I came home. So it's just a matter of finding balance and keeping that in the forefront of my mind and making sure that I also have people in my life who will pull me to the side and go, hey, you might want to take a break. You're putting a little too much on yourself. So it's a lot of little things that just make it work. And eventually my goal is to not have to work full time and to be able to do what I do, you know, as my main job, and eventually I'll get there. But right now, I still have to have the income from my job.
Did you catch anything on that fishing trip?
Actually, no, we didn't.
No.
But it was fun. It was a lot of fun.
That's right.
I love that perspective, though, Kirsten, of just being willing to drop everything and just spend that quality time. And like you said, nothing was on fire when you got back, and
right,
the blog was still there waiting for you. So I think that balance it's really important.
I think bloggers put a lot of pressure on themselves to, you know, it's great to have an editorial calendar, but you can't live and die by that editorial calendar, and you can't live and die by a to-do list. And I think bloggers put so much pressure on themselves that somebody somewhere in the infinite internet is going to look down on them because they don't get the post up on Monday and it goes up on Tuesday instead. So it's little things like that that you just have to be able to let go of and go, you know what, in the grand scheme of things, it really doesn't matter. It's not going to bring the world to an end if I'm a day late with something or if I have to tell somebody no or put something to the side or whatever. So, and that's been really hard for me because I'm a big control freak. So I've had to really work hard on that. And that's what that 6 month time off did. I just really focused on my priorities and made sure that when I did come back, I kept those priorities and let everything else kind of fall into place afterwards.
I love that. So can you explain to our listeners, some of whom are pretty new to either a blog or an online business, and they may not really understand why an email newsletter is so important for their business and for growing. Can you talk a little bit about the importance of that?
Absolutely. When you first start blogging or even when you've been blogging for a while, social media is really pushed as where you need to be. You know, you're supposed to pick a couple of social media networks and really focus on those and work really hard to build your community on social media, whether it's Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or whatever. But when it all comes down to it, you're kind of shooting fish in a barrel, so to speak. You don't have any real control over who sees what you're putting out there. Prime example, if you look at Facebook, a regular post on a Facebook page sees an average of 17% of your readers, of people who actually like your page. So if you have 1,000 fans on your Facebook page, only about 170 of them are averaging seeing your Facebook post, and that's not very many. And of those 170, it's really hard to tell how many of them are actually clicking through to your blog. So when you take your information on your blog and you put it in a newsletter and somebody takes the time to subscribe to that newsletter, they're giving you space and time in their inbox and they want what you're sending them. So it's a targeted audience and they've invested time in you. They like what you're doing enough that they're giving you space in their inbox. So on average, when you send out a newsletter with your blog post in it, at least 50% of people who subscribe are going to open it and click through to it. And that's a huge increase from what you see on just Facebook. That's a big deal, especially if you're a new blogger. And one of the things that I hear very often is, well, I just started my blog and email marketing is on my list of things to do. But honestly, it should be at the very top of your list. As soon as you start a blog, you should at the very least have just a simple little sign-up form where you start collecting emails. Even if you're not doing anything with them yet, you should start collecting them from day one.
And I know you are a big proponent of MailChimp, which is actually who we use as well. And MailChimp is actually free up until, what is it, like 2,000?
Yep, it's either 2,000 subscribers or 10,000 emails a month, whichever comes first. So it just kind of depends on how you use it. But if you're sending like once a week to however many, you know, if you have up to 2,000 subscribers, then you can send once a week to all 2,000 for free. But once you hit over that 10,000 email per month mark, then it starts going up from there.
So that makes it very accessible for even the newest blogger to start that email list.
Absolutely.
If they can start it for absolutely free before they have to pay anything.
Absolutely. And MailChimp's just, there's so many things you can do in MailChimp that really are just super easy to make it useful. So, I mean, even a beginner blogger can just create a simple MailChimp account, a simple little sign-up form that just collects a name and an email address and pop it on their sidebar, and they don't have to touch it. And then when they finally do get around to that item on their to-do list, they've already got a bank of emails that they can start sending to.
And can you talk a little bit about some of the legal aspects of email newsletters that someone who's just getting started needs to keep in mind?
One of the big things that kind of has been talked about quite a bit, especially lately, is the Canadian anti-spam laws. Those were kind of pushed in every blogger's face about 6 months ago, and bloggers freaked out that they wouldn't be able to send newsletters anymore. But that basically means that you can't spam anybody who gets your emails in Canada. And to be on the safe side, you can't spam anybody. It's just not good marketing. What I mean by that is you have to have written documentation of every subscriber, And that's where your sign-up form comes in. So if you have a sign-up form and that's how people are adding their email list, then you're covered. They're giving you permission to email them. And that's really what it needs. You can't just go, hey, I know this person's email. I'm going to stick them on my list. You can't do that. And you shouldn't do that, regardless of if they're in Canada or if they're in France or wherever they are. You shouldn't do that. But the good news is business is like MailChimp and Mad Mimi and Constant Contact and all of these other email service providers. Their terms of use are more strict than the Canadian anti-spam laws. So if you're following the terms of use on MailChimp, then you're completely covered. So you don't really have to worry about it.
That is good news. That makes it a little bit easier to keep track of all the different laws and rules.
Absolutely. And I do recommend, as boring as it is, that everybody who signs up for any email service provider at least glances at the terms of use, because there are some things in there that you have to be aware of. One of the big things that people kind of balk at when they first set up their email list is the fact that you have to have a mailing address in your footer. A lot of people don't want to put their mailing address, so they'll put, like, Becky Smith, Atlanta, Georgia, and they think that's good enough, but that's not good enough. You can get booted out of MailChimp or whatever your service provider is, and it's not good. There are some fines involved if you get caught not listing your address. So if you have a really big problem with having it down in the footer, you can always get a P.O. box. They're fairly cheap. So that's definitely something to be aware of. And affiliate links is another one, and that's kind of touchy. Bloggers love affiliate links, and they are fabulous to help you make a little bit of extra cash here and there. And you are allowed to use those in your email marketing as long as you disclose it, just like you would on a blog post. However, the one no to that is Amazon. You cannot use Amazon affiliate links in your email marketing, and that's an Amazon rule. So if you have an Amazon affiliate link in a blog post and you want to syndicate that blog post through email, you have to either remove it from the email before it goes out or truncate your post so that it's not included in that email.
Uh-oh. Well, that's good to know. So that's why there was a blogger I was following for a while who used to include in the email. Her email every day was just her full blog post. But then she went to a truncated version where you had to click through to her website to see the rest of the post. So I'm guessing that was probably her reasoning for switching that method of emailing.
Either that, or she was getting, you know, her post may have been getting copied out of the email. Because I've heard a lot of people have that problem too, where other blogs will just copy the content and paste it on their blog in its entirety. So one of the two. But yeah, if you have any kind of Amazon, and a lot of bloggers are Amazon affiliates, so if you have any Amazon affiliate links in your post, just be aware that if you send out, you know, an RSS-driven email for all of your posts, you really need to make sure that those posts are truncated so that you don't get your hand slapped by Amazon for including that in your emails.
Yeah, that's definitely good to know. That was one of the rules that I wasn't aware of until we chatted with you. So thank you for sharing that.
Sure.
Can you walk us through, now that we've kind of covered the groundwork for making sure everything is kosher and the way it should be for setting up their email service, walk us through some of the best list building strategies out there, or the things that have worked really well for you and your clients?
One of the things is, and it's very simple, you need a sign-up form everywhere. Not like 15,000 places, but you don't ever know what page your readers are going to show up on your blog. So you want to make sure that wherever a new reader comes to your blog, they're going to have an option to sign up. Because if somebody really likes what you're doing, regardless of how much they really like your blog, they're not going to go on an Easter egg hunt for your sign-up form to see if you have a newsletter. So you need to make it very simple for them to sign up. So I recommend that you have it in a bare minimum of three places. You need one in your sidebar. You need one in the footer of every post. And then you can either put one in your header, or if you have a static homepage or like your contact or your about page, you need to pick a third location. So it's really important to make it super easy. So if you put one in your post footer and they're reading through your post, when they get to the end, they can have a nice little happy message that says, hey, if you like this, sign up for my newsletter to get more. That makes it really easy, and that definitely helps build your list. Another one is if you're on WordPress, there are tons of plugins and pop-ups that you can use to help gather email addresses. My absolute favorite, and I've recommended and installed this for several clients, is called Pop-Up Ally, and there is a free version. It's what I call a polite pop-up. It's customizable, which I really like. You can really customize it so that it coordinates perfectly with your brand. You can change the font colors. You can add your logo. You can type in any wording you might have about an opt-in offer or whatever. And it tracks the IP addresses for the people who visit your blog. So you can go behind the scenes and you can set it. Mine is set for 14 days. So Sarah, for example, if you showed up on my blog today and you go to click the red X to get out of it, it would pop up because it's set to exit intent. And if you sign up, that's great. If not, no worries. But then you come back tomorrow or even a week from now, you're not going to see it again. You'll only see it once every 14 days if you visit my blog from the same IP address. So it's not constantly in your face. But there are other plugins, like MailChimp has one specifically that's MailChimp for WordPress. A lot of bloggers use HelloBar. So there's a bunch of different ones, and you just have to find the one that works best for you.
I love that feature of the pop-up ally. I'd love for us to try it at some point, but you know, that's really neat that you can, like you said, it's friendly. It's not in your face every time, the way you can set it so that it's not going to show up every time someone visits your site. That's really smart.
Yeah. And I'll email you the link to it if you want to add it, you know, after the podcast link or whatever, if people want to use it, because it really is. It's so easy to set up. And with the free version, you can actually set up two pop-ups. So if you have a landing page that you want a different opt-in for, you can set that. You can tell it what pages you want it to go on or not go on. You can tell it what posts you want it to appear or not appear. I mean, there's tons of customization, and it's completely free. There is a paid version that comes with the analytics and all that good stuff, but you honestly don't really need it. You can use the free version and do tons of stuff with it. So I'll send you the link.
Now, if I'm being perfectly honest, I have mixed feelings still about the pop-up in general, but you are, I'm sure, the expert. Is there a really good conversion rate with the pop-up email sign-up form? What do you think?
From my own experience, from the time I started using Pop-Up Ally, which was, I've probably been using Pop-Up Ally for about 8 months, and my list has doubled. I can't contribute it solely to Pop-Up Ally, but my list has grown faster since I've been using it than before I had it. And I've heard that from quite a few clients who have set it up. And it's just because it's right there. It pops up. And, you know, it's easy to ignore if you want to ignore it. If you're a reader, and I know, you know, a lot of bloggers are like you, Sarah, they do have mixed emotions about pop-ups. But that's why I like this one, because it doesn't pop up as soon as they come to my page. They have to be exiting before it pops up. And you can change that setting as well, but I have it set to exit intent. So they're doing whatever they're doing on my site. They're popping over here and going over here and reading different posts. And then when they're finally done and they go to exit, that's when they see it. And then if they want to come back in a few days, like I said, they're not going to see it again. So it really is very unobtrusive, which is nice. It's not ugly either, which is cool. I've seen some pop-ups on some sites that are just really obnoxious. You know, they're really in your face, and it's almost like a car salesman yelling at you, and I don't like that either. But this one, you know, I've got my soft colors, and it coordinates really well with my branding, and it's a nice, friendly little opt-in, and I even say y'all because that's what I say all the time. So, I mean, it's just, it's really friendly, and it's, you know, it's not in your face. It's not going to jump out at you every single time you come to the blog. So it is a matter of preference, but I have seen really good returns from it.
You might have convinced me.
At the very least, try it for 30 days.
That's a good idea.
That's true. We should try it out, and then test and share our results with everyone.
There you go.
Yeah. Fine. See what we think. I will say, Kirsten, that because I've seen the pop-up ally. I remember specifically it was on one of Abby's posts on Just a Girl on the Blog. And it was, and I think they used the paid version like you, where, you know, there's a few more options. And so they had a very specific offer that was directly tied to what I was reading about. And
oh, wow.
So that was what was really enticing to me, was like, okay, I was just reading something about, maybe it was on their income report or something, and so I'm learning about blogging as a way to, you know, earn an income, and then bam, something pops up that's like related to that. I think it was like a 7-day challenge or something like that, and it was like, oh, I gotta grab this. I gotta sign up. And again, yeah, it's that point of, if it had just been a link within the post, I don't know, I may have been skimming through the post so fast mm-hmm. that I didn't notice it, but the pop-up made it feel a little more irresistible.
Yep, it does.
So, Kirsten, you've definitely convinced us the importance of building that email newsletter, and you've given us some great strategies already for building that email newsletter list. A lot of people talk a lot about crafting a great opt-in offer. What do you think makes a great email opt-in offer?
Well, an opt-in offer is something of value that your subscribers will get for free. You want to give people an incentive to sign up and really entice them, but it needs to be something that's valuable, and that value is determined by several different factors. It's not going to be the same across the board. So basically, you know, your readers aren't going to know how great your newsletter is unless they sign up for it. So you have to give them a reason sometimes to sign up other than just your fabulous content on your blog. So when you offer things like freebies or subscriber-only deals or even exclusive access to like a private group or a forum, that's a little extra enticement to get on your list and see what else you have to offer. So when you're crafting an opt-in offer, one of the things you need to consider is who your target audience is. You want to think about their struggles and see if you can provide a solution. So if your target audience is, for example, moms of toddlers, and you are a mom of toddlers, then you know what their struggles are. You can relate to them. So maybe you need to give them a great little handy printable list of snack and lunch ideas for toddlers that are toddler and mom approved. If your target audience is bloggers who are starting a business, your opt-in offer should not be snacks for toddlers. It's not going to have the same value. So you really need to consider who your target audience is and create an opt-in offer that will appeal to them. You also need to consider your resources, what time you have to actually create this opt-in offer and what your talents are. One of my really good friends is a very talented blogger and business person. Her name's Julie Harris, and she has a very active private Facebook group that is her opt-in offer. But if you don't have the time to invest in a private Facebook group and you're not going to be able to actively be involved in the conversations going on there and monitor what's going on in there, then you shouldn't offer that as one of your opt-in offers. So if you only have 15 minutes to throw together an opt-in, but you want it to be really great, you might want to make a printable, or you might want to take one of your really awesome blog posts that did really well and condense it into a printable of some kind of handy worksheet that they can print out and keep. I know some photography blogs do that. They have like a little printable booklet that people can cut out and put on a little ring binder that they can hook to their camera bag, and it gives them tips for taking better pictures, and it's just really quick and easy that they can throw together, but it's valuable to their readers. Another thing to look at is your archives. If you've got some old content but you have new readers, that's new content to them because they've never seen it. So you can take some of your older content and see what posted really well and see if you can expand upon those or present the same information in a new way in the form of an opt-in offer if it would be valuable. And finally, another thing to think about is your opt-in doesn't actually have to be anything tangible. You could offer a Twitter chat. You could offer an Instagram challenge to get your readers involved and open those lines of communication. If you have products or services that you offer for sale, you could offer a discount to those subscribers. So there's really a lot of different ways to present it, but as long as the bottom line is it presents value to your readers and it's for free, then you've got a quality opt-in offer.
Those are some great tips, Kirsten, and I think you summed it up really well with that point that it's what your audience perceives as valuable, and you know that's going to be so different just depending on what the focus is of your site, of your shop, of your business. You know, it's what is that ideal customer, ideal reader of yours, what's most important to them, or what are their pressing problems. So I loved all your tips. That will definitely get our listeners, you know, their brains churning. So, Kirsten, once we've gotten to the point where we've got our great opt-in offer, I know one of the other powerful things you can do with email is set up an autoresponder sequence. But I know for me, that feels really overwhelming. Could you share with us what's the most effective way to use an autoresponder sequence or, I guess, you know, get that going and implement that into our strategy?
Well, it's kind of along the same vein as the opt-in offer. There's really not a wrong way to do it, and it really depends on your goals. So for bloggers, autoresponders are a great way to introduce new readers to old content. You know, I mentioned earlier that your old content is not old to new readers. So it's a great way to regenerate that content and create a series that's very welcoming. I know Abby from Just a Girl and her blog, we mentioned her earlier, but she's really great about this. So when people subscribe to her email list, they get a welcome email, and she tells them a little bit about herself and her family and how her blog started. And then roughly every week for the next few weeks, she sends them another email that's on the autoresponder, and it's different categories of her blog posts and just highlights from her archives. And it's a great way to, like I said, regenerate that old content and get it in front of new faces. So that's one of the easiest ways for bloggers to set that up. Another way, a really cool way, is with like a mini e-course, and this could tie in with your opt-in. So, for example, if you are, let's say, like a home decor blogger, and you have all these tips that you've put together in various blog posts, you can combine all of those tips and make it like a six-week e-course, and that can be your opt-in, and you set it up as an autoresponder, and every week for 6 weeks they get another home decor tip. And all you're doing is regurgitating content that you've already created. You're just putting it into an auto-responding email. So it's very simple to set up. And then you can even have a follow-up at the end with a product purchase if you have a product that you're trying to sell that ties into whatever that course was. If you're trying to sell, automation is a great way to build trust and authority. So you can set up an opt-in, like I have my Inbox of Opportunity ebook. So I could set up an opt-in that is a list of opt-in offers that people can use. That would be a good one. You can send out a tip or something relating to email marketing and then follow it up, start teasing with, hey, you know, if this interests you, you might be interested in this book. And you can, you know, do a hard sell towards the end after you've already built that trust and authority. They know what you're talking about by the time you get three or four emails in. They realize that you know your stuff, so people are more apt to buy whatever it is you're selling when they realize that you do know what you're talking about. So there's a ton of uses for automation, and it really kind of depends on your email marketing goals. The welcome email series is a great way to start to just get your feet wet. And it's, again, it's just reintroducing old content to new readers. So it's really pretty simple to set up, and it's actually a lot of fun to start seeing those page views come back around on older content.
Those are some fabulous ideas that really seem fairly easy to do. It seems very manageable for a blogger to set up something like that.
Absolutely.
Kirsten, you have been a wealth of information today. I'm so glad we've had a chance to talk with you.
Thank you.
As we wrap up, would you mind sharing with us a funny or adorable mom moment that you've had recently?
Absolutely. Well, this isn't recently, but it's too good not to share. And my daughter would kill me if she heard me repeating this, but it's really funny. My daughter's 13 now, but when she was little, I had a children's clothing store and a Target shopping center, and it was when she was in preschool. And we used to go, like, once a week, we'd close the shop up for about half an hour, and we'd go to Target just to kind of get out of the store and give her some fresh air and all that good stuff. So we were in Target one day, and limited amount of time, I had to get back and reopen the store, and Marley gets involved in whatever toy it was that caught her eye, and she just refused to leave, and she planted those feet, and she was not having it. Well, about a week prior, she was in karate, which is right next door to where I had my store, and they had apparently taught her stranger danger. So I go to get Marley out of the store, and after several attempts, she wasn't leaving, so I grabbed her arm and proceeded to pull her out of the toy section. She stands up, takes her fist, and slams it on my arm, and at the top of her lungs, she screams, "Stranger danger! You're not my mom!" And she runs away.
Oh
Oh no.
It was awful. And I dared anybody in Target to say a word. I was so aggravated. It's hysterical now to think back at my little 3-year-old telling me stranger danger, but it was not funny at the time.
No. That would be, like, mortifying.
It was. And there's moms looking at me like, what are you doing to this kid? And I'm like, I swear to you, she's mine. She's mine, I promise.
Yeah, those other shoppers must have been wondering, like, do I get involved right
now? I know.
Is it really her mom, not her mom?
It was terrible.
That might make every other child tantrum in a store story pale in comparison.
Yeah.
Well, thank you again, Kirsten, for chatting with us. This was a lot of fun. And before we say goodbye, can you tell our listeners one more time, where is the best place to find you online?
My blog is sweetteaandsavinggraceblog.com, and you can also find my ebook and my one-on-one consulting for email marketing at sweetteaandsavinggraceblog.com/inbox of opportunity. You can connect with me on Twitter and Instagram at sweetteagrace and on facebook.com/sweetteablog.
Awesome. Well, thanks again. We really enjoyed this. It was lots of fun.
It was fun. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
For the show notes, head to brilliantbusinessmoms.com/93. And while you're checking out the show notes, be sure to click on the link that we have at the bottom of the show notes that directs you to Kirsten's blog, because she has set up a special landing page for you guys. And the opt-in offer on that landing page is a list of 101 newsletter content and opt-in offer ideas for free. So clearly, Kirsten knows what she's talking about when it comes to email marketing. And if you're interested in getting your hands on her list of 101 newsletter content and opt-in offer ideas, then head to our show notes, brilliantbusinessmoms.com/93. Click on the link we have set up for Kirsten's blog. And on that special landing page for you guys, you'll see her opt-in offer when you sign up for her newsletter. I personally have already gone over and signed myself up for her newsletter in order to get my hands on her free offer. I hope you're having a great day. Now it's your turn to head out there and be brilliant.